deals 2-0. Fastball lined up the gap into right center field. That's hit deep. That's heading for the wall. And it goes into the seats. A home run for Vernon. He has four RBIs tonight, and the Angels go out in front 6-1.
And there really was the death blow for the Blue Jays today. That's the play of the game brought to you by Rogers On Demand. Watch the Jays live from anywhere, online or on the go at RogersOnDemand.com. And in the penultimate game for the Blue Jays at home this season, they get thumped by the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. The final score, 7-2, as you just heard Jerry Howard say. Vernon Wells drove in four. Two-run single in the sixth that made it 4-0. Two-run homer in the eighth there off of Casey Jansen, who had a rare bad outing, giving up four hits to the six batters he faced. But one of them was an infield single. Another one was a little nothing flare over third base. And a third one was just a ground ball up the middle. So Vernon got him, but nobody else did. But these are the kinds of things that can happen. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Jays Talk. Take your phone calls to the top of the hour at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell and long distance 1-888-666-0590. The big stories tonight were Dustin McGowan and Brett Laurie. And the other big story is that the Boston Red Sox blew a 4-2 lead in the seventh inning and lost tonight to the Baltimore Orioles 6-4. I know that the current thing to do in the media is to say that whatever is happening right now is the biggest thing that has ever happened in the history of anything. But this is one of the most epic collapses in the history of Major League Baseball. Although, the Red Sox with this loss may even pick up a half game on the Tampa Bay Rays tonight. Because the Rays lost the opener of a doubleheader with the Yankees 4-2, and they are tied with the Yankees 2-2 in the bottom of the seventh in the second game. If Boston should blow this, they get a 9-game lead on September 1st. This is pretty huge. They lose today to the Baltimore Orioles. 6-4 is the final score. And with that loss, that means that these Angels are just 2.5 games out of the wild card in the American League. And that door is certainly not closed on them, as the Rays have to play the Yankees 4 more times and the Blue Jays 3. Door's still open for The Angels, amazingly. We'll keep our eye on that Rays game as well, and also let you know that the Atlanta Braves lost today 4-0 to Javi Vasquez and the Florida Marlins, and David Fries just hit a 3-run home run with two out in the bottom of the seventh inning, his 10th home run of the season, to give the St. Louis Cardinals a 6-4 lead on the New York Mets. They're now going to the top of the eighth. If that score holds, the Cards will move to just a game and a half behind the Braves for the wild card in the National League, and that is another epic collapse. Atlanta had about a 9.5 game lead not too long ago in early September. Amazing. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance 1-888-666-0590. Again, Brett Laurie out for the year, which is a week, broken finger, and Dustin McGowan. How about Dustin McGowan? Oh, you know, I know people love to call the Jays talk and be negative, 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 negative. How can you not be over the moon about what Dustin McGowan has accomplished? He struck out 8 today in 5 innings of work without a walk, giving up 2 runs on 5 hits. The last time Dustin McGowan struck out as many as 8 guys in a game was 4 years and 4 days ago, when he struck out 9 in a complete game win over the Red Sox here at Rogers Center on September 17th, 2007. Is he all the way back? I don't know. Can you count on him for anything in the future? I don't know. But what I do know is watching Dustin McGowan now just 4 appearances in to his return after 3 years, more than 3 years on the shelf. He looks like a really, really good big league pitcher again. Let's get to the phones. Mike in Toronto, start things off with you. Welcome to the Jays Talk.
Hi, Mike. I spoke to you about 3 weeks ago. I'm the guy from Boston. I've been in Toronto for about a year now. But
Sorry about the Red Sox.
at least we're playing meaningful games, unlike the Blue Jays.
Well, not playing them very meaningfully.
All this talk about and the continuing saga of hyping the Toronto Blue Jays, which has all seemed to do pretty well. What's Baptista? What's he done since the All-Star break? And all this talk about him being the MVP.
There's no T in Bautista.
However you pronounce it, I'm sorry, a Boston accent, I guess. what are his numbers since the All-Star break compared to a guy like Granderson? I mean, I just don't see. I'm a big baseball fan, so I've been watching the Blue Jays and the Bo Sox, you know, all year. But since the All-Star break, I haven't seen Baptista, however you pronounce it, do a lot. I mean, do you have his numbers there in front of you by chance?
His numbers are down since the All-Star break. There's no question about that.
Since the All-Star break,
all the numbers are down. He's hitting .249 with 11 home runs in 57 games, but his OPS is still .887, which is awfully strong, but not incredible. He's been a mortal since the All-Star break, whereas he was an immortal. He was Babe Ruth before the All-Star break, and now he's just been a guy who's a really, really good major league hitter.
Well,
so,
hang on a minute. .247 since the All-Star break with 11 home runs. Where does that make him an MVP?
The whole season counts is the
thing. I understand that. What's Granderson since the All-Star break, out of curiosity?
Curtis Granderson, out of curiosity, since the All-Star break, is hitting .273 with 16 home runs and an OPS of .959, which is about 70 points higher. Of course, before the All-Star break, Granderson hit 25 home runs to Bautista's 31, and his OPS was about 240 points lower.
No, I understand that, but I mean, I mean, would you not admit that with a .247 batting average since the All-Star break, that really, you know, I don't see where how he'd be the MVP? Like, I mean,
I don't know. Granderson hit two.
Verlander ahead of him.
Granderson hit .256 in June and .250 in July, and he's hitting .254 in September. So how's that an MVP?
But he's hit 16 home runs. You said it since the All-Star break. He's been, what, .275?
Uh-huh. But again,
well, I mean,
you're taking
35 points better than .247.
You're grabbing a sample of however many 57 games that Jose Bautista's played in since the All-Star break.
All the chatter in the last week or two about Bautista being the MVP. I mean, where, a matter of fact,
hold on a second.
I mean,
hold on. Mike,
where would
Mike,
he be
Mike,
on the
stop.
Blue Jay hitters?
Mike. If you don't let me talk, I'm not going to let you talk, all right? This is the way it works. When you present an argument, that's lovely. But when I ask you a question, I would like you to answer it instead of changing the subject.
So you've talked about
how you're upset that Jose Bautista has hit .247 since the All-Star break, right? Okay, so that's a sample of 57 games. I have given you 68 games in which Curtis Granderson is hitting about .252. So why is Bautista not an MVP, but Granderson is?
Well, I guess the Yankees. Well, he's had since the All-Star break. He's had 60. I'm going since the All-Star break.
Okay, but I don't care. I mean, that's completely irrelevant that you've chosen this arbitrary period of time. I'm talking about June, July, and September. And in June, July, and September, Curtis Granderson's hitting .252. So why does Jose Bautista since the All-Star break matter more?
Well, I don't know. As far as for the MVP, I mean, I just think that how you finish up the season, I don't see where he's... I mean, he's been very weak, let's be honest.
He's not been very weak. He's just not been incredibly strong.
How many home runs? 11 home runs. I mean, so he's got 42 home runs. So he had 30 in the first half, basically, and he's hit 11 home runs in sort of the second half.
Not quite, because you can't divide it by halves. He played in 84 games before the break, and he's played in, I think, 57 since. So it's not like half and half. But, yes, he had an amazing, quote-unquote, first half of the season. In the second half, since the All-Star break, he's been beat up, and he's only hitting like a mortal as opposed to an immortal. But I think we're starting to repeat ourselves a little too much, so we got to get off this.
Can I have one other point?
Yeah.
I think the Blue Jay fans worry far too much about, I think Rogers, I've looked at it, I mean, this is about an $8 billion company. And I'm trying to be a Blue Jay. Well, I'm trying to be a Blue Jay fan.
No, you're not.
Because I live in Toronto now. And I know you've talked about them increasing their payroll, and it's tough to increase their payroll. I think they should try to sign this Yu Darvish. And I know what you're saying about having the post and all that.
Yep.
But I mean, do you think they're going to make a real serious effort to sign him? Like I'm not worried if they have to spend $60 million to post and sign him for $50. Like, it's not my money. And
no.
The fans shouldn't worry about it. It's not their money.
No, it's not. It's not your money. It's not their money. It's all true. But as I've said many times, the fact that you have money doesn't mean that you should just set it on fire because you have it. But I think they will make a very, very, very serious effort at signing Yu Darvish. I think they'll be slugging and they'll be right in there the whole way, top to bottom. And if they wind up making the best bid on the posting fee, then they'll get him. But I don't think you should just, you know, blow the bank for the sake of blowing the bank so that you can say, hey, we signed this guy for tons more than he's worth and will ever wind up being worth for us. Ray in Toronto, you're next.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. I have a question. It's an unusual question because it's a rare situation in baseball probably, but I just need your views on this.
I like unusual questions. Hit me.
Okay, what if there's a three-way tie for the wild card? So, for example, the Red Sox, Rays, and Angels all finish up tied for the wild card. What would Major League Baseball do for the wild card?
If the Red Sox, Rays, and Angels all finish tied for the wild card, they
right.
have a two-day tournament to decide who wins the wild card. I don't know how they break the ties anymore. They used to do coin flips. I don't think they do it like that anymore. But
that's what the NFL probably.
Pardon?
That's with the NFL, the coin flips, I think.
No, the coin flip is usually the last thing they do to break ties
right.
in the NFL.
Yeah.
But this wouldn't be to break a tie. This would just be to decide three things. You have they would be ranked 1 through 3. And again, I'm not sure how you determine the rankings, whether it's head-to-head or how it is. But there would be a Team A, a Team B, and a Team C. Team A gets to choose first whether they want to be the home team and host two games, or whether they just want to play game two on the road. And then
okay.
Team B, depending on what Team A chooses, mm-hmm. would either host the first game or play on the road in the second game, I think. I'm going to have to look this up because I'm not 100% sure on it, but I believe what happens is one day there's a game between the first two teams. The winner of that goes on to play the next game at home. And the winner of that would be the wild card team.
But it is quite complicated, right? It's a complicated scenario.
It's not simple by any means. I'm going to look it up and see
before.
If I can really break it down for you. I think I've got it, but but something just doesn't smell right about that. So I'll see
if you wouldn't mind
do.
Looking it up, Mike. That would be great if you wouldn't mind looking it up.
All right. That's what I'm here for. Happy to do it. Thank you for the call. I will check those tie-breaking procedures for the wild card in baseball. And we'll get back to you with those right after we hear from the skipper, John Farrell. Here's what Farrell had to say about tonight's 7-2 loss by the Blue Jays.
Tough day on a couple of fronts. Obviously, the outcome of tonight's ball game, and certainly the fractured finger of Brett Lawrie. But on a positive note, tonight, thought Dustin took another solid step in his return, his progression coming back. Once again, he pitched in the bottom of the strike zone, induced a number of ground balls with that two-seamer. He showed a good slider and a good curveball. A couple of pitches up in the zone to Burgess, who put on some kind of show tonight, offensively and defensively. And I thought Chad Beck came in, showed very good arm strength, attacked the zone, and pitched a clean ninth inning for us.
Just on Brett Lawrie, can you just tell us exactly what happened to him, how he suffered his injury?
In his normal pregame routine, while he was fielding ground balls with feeds to second base on the front end of a double play, on one ground ball, it bounced up off the turf a little bit quicker than the normal rhythm of the ground balls, and as it jumped into the glove, where his throwing hand was there to make the transfer, it hit the end of the middle finger. And once the doctor came here, reviewed the x-rays, it did show the fracture. So he is shut down for the season.
Just in terms of, what was Heron able to do that befuddled all the bats tonight?
3 and 4 pitches for strikes at different times. When he got in fastball counts, he had a good late action cutter that was effective to both lefties and righties. He had that split to finish some guys off. And he stayed out of the middle of the plate with his fastball. He comes into tonight with 220-some innings and It's not by mistake. He's a very accomplished, very good pitcher.
Dustin McGowan's pitched pretty effectively his last couple of starts. Kind of a two-part question. Firstly, how far along in his progression are you surprised at how far along he is in? And is there a scenario, I guess, next year where he could potentially be a candidate for next year's rotation?
Well, the one thing that we've stated all along is this is clearly a rehab year for him. The main goal is to not only get him back to game activity, but to get him through the entire year healthy, which with one remaining start, everything points in that direction. The fact that we got him back to the big leagues here, and that's a tribute to his hard work and his progression. He's adapted and made some adjustments over the four outings that he's had for us. And I think once we get through a normal offseason for him, keep in mind he's been throwing a baseball since last December, so he is going to get a well-earned rest and a well-earned normal offseason for him. And once we get into spring training, he's a guy that will compete for our club.
And well, he should. That's John Farrell talking about Dustin McGowan. I looked up the tiebreaker. I was right. I'll explain it a little further. When we come back, we will check the scoreboard, and we will extend all the Jays talk all the way to 11 o'clock Eastern times. If you're on hold, stay on hold. If you're not on hold, get on hold. Blue Jays fall 7-2 to the Angels. It's a Honda postgame show on the Blue Jays Radio Network.
There's a high fly ball deep right field. That's up, and yes, sir, there she goes. A second deck home run. Number 11 for Eric Thames. He puts the Blue Jays in flight here in this sixth inning, now trailing the Angels 4-1.
That was leading off the sixth inning, the first sniff that the Blue Jays got off of Danny Heron, but the Angels put up three more in the top of the eighth, a two-run homer by Vernon Wells in there as well, to take a 7-1 lead and go on to a 7-2 victory over your Toronto Blue Jays. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Extendo Jays Talk. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. So bottom of the eighth now. Yankees and Rays are tied at 2. CC Sabathia is not going to get his 20th win of the season. But more importantly than that, the Rays need to pick up a victory here. Because they're in deep trouble. If they lose this game, they will fall 2.5 games back of the Red Sox for the wild card and into a tie with the Angels for second place in those wild card standings. We're taking your phone calls, 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Also on the Twitter, at Wilnerness590. And why not the twit asks, when's the last time Jose Bautista's batting average was under 300? Bautista's batting average dipped to 299 when he got out in the we bounced out to the pitcher in the bottom of the sixth. So he was hitting 299, but then he singled in his next at-bat in the eighth and is now hitting 301. The last time Jose Bautista's batting average was under 300 before the sixth inning today was when he grounded out to the shortstop in the third inning on opening day. He had walked in the first and scored. That ground out kept him at zero, but then he homered and had a couple of singles, and by the time the first game was over, he was hitting 750, and the batting average has not been under 300 since. So good for Jose Bautista. It's just incredible. Every time, it seems, every time a challenge is issued, he rises to meet it, whether it's someone catching. Wow. Whether it's someone catching him in the home run race, or whether it's someone, or whether it's himself batting under 300. Sorry for the loss for words for a second. Mark Feinstein, who writes for the New York, Times. I hope I'm right. And is someone I respect greatly. Big fan of his since his days. He writes for the New York Daily News. A big fan of his since the days of the when he worked for MLB.com. Feinstein just tweeted, one could argue that David Robertson has been every bit the MVP as Robinson Cano or Curtis Granderson. And that's after David Robertson just got Ben Zobrist to bounce into that double play in the eighth to end it. But that is a huge stretch, I think. Huge. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell. Long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Back to the phones we go. Greg is in Toronto. Hello, Greg.
How you doing, Mike?
Good, thank you.
Boy, you got a lot of patience, man, I tell you. This guy talking about Bautista, I mean, like you say, 300 average, 42 home runs. I mean, big disappointment.
Well, look, the thing is,
huge
the thing is, an MVP season, a season is a season. As much as people would like to break it down into first half versus second half or however, you know.
It doesn't matter, man.
It's a full season, and that's what you have to look at.
Exactly. And the guy's just, well, you know, he's made what everybody was hoping that he would be, and we're fearing that he wouldn't.
You know what? It's funny. Somebody tweeted me during the game, and I can't answer the Twitters during a game. There's just too much going on. But someone tweeted, and I'm trying to find it right now, something about Bautista. Here it is. What if Bautista's carriage has turned back into a pumpkin? Think positive, think positive. And the only thing I can think of is he is leading the major leagues in home runs, on base percentage, and slugging percentage. How is that this guy turning back into a pumpkin?
Yeah, no, I don't know. It's kind of ridiculous. I don't really understand it. But you know what? That guy pitching tonight, I tell you something right now. He's if he actually is healthy and can even be 80% of what he was before, it's absolutely amazing. I'm so happy for him, and I think it marks for a great. I mean, he'd easily be a great three next year.
Talking about Dustin McGowan, and yeah, you know
absolutely.
What? You're absolutely
McGowan,
right. Absolutely right.
He was Dustin McGowan was future number one when he went down.
Yes, he was.
And
right
so,
on the doorstep.
Pardon me?
He was right on the doorstep.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know what? Tonight, he looked like, I mean, if he doesn't go down, he looked like he's on the road back to that. So I don't know. That's my impression. I don't know.
I'm thrilled by what he's done, and I appreciate the call, Greg. Thank you. The truth of the matter is, if Dustin McGowan is Dustin McGowan again, and if he's healthy, and after all this downtime, who knows, and what's it going to do to, you know, to innings limits, and how do you keep an eye on guys, and how do you assess this after someone's been out of the game for over 3 years? But his career high in innings is 170, but that was 4 years ago. If he's healthy and if he's out there capable of going out there and taking the ball 30 times, and even if he can only give you six, you've added a number two starter for nothing. Right, his stuff is right there with Brandon Morrow's, with Henderson Alvarez's, and with Kyle Drabek's. And I know that Morrow and Drabek are dirty words now among Blue Jay fans, which I think is ridiculous. The stuff is incredible. And McGowan has the stuff and the experience and the unbridled tenacity to make it back to the major leagues after such a long time out. It's an amazing, amazing story. Victor is in Milton. Hello, Victor.
Hello, Mike. If I had a dollar for all those ifs, I would probably be a millionaire.
I think there are only three ifs there.
Well, no, before your three ifs, there were a lot of ifs before that when it came to Dustin McGowan. And you know what? If he can be that future number one, which he was slated to be back then this argument that I'm going to put forward probably be moot. Listen, you know what? Jeff Blair said today that the challenge for general managers to have is the pitching mature at the same time as the hitting for them to be a contending team. Now, the problem is we only have one number one starter. I think the formula is if you have two number one starters, you'll do pretty well. Now, in terms of value, like Brett Laurie fetched us, or Markham, was traded for Brett Laurie.
Right.
Now, so Markham was a 14-game winner, I think, or 13.
Last year?
Yeah, or even as high.
Well, I don't care.
It doesn't matter
how many wins you have. What matters is how you pitch, and Markham had a very good year last year.
Okay, all right. So let's say we needed to get a pitcher above Markham's caliber. What is that worth? Like, because we're not going to get one by developing one. I'm patient.
Why not? They developed Markham. They developed Romero. Romero's better than Markham.
Excellent. You walked right into my point.
Oh, good.
It will take a number of years, and we have one guy there that don't have a number of years, and that's our most valuable player right now, which is Jose Bautista. And that's what I'm concerned about. Like, you know, he might be good for great for another year, but what about, you know, the years, 2-3 years after that? He might not, it'll probably just flame out, maybe. And that's what I'm concerned about.
I don't know what the basis of he'll probably just flame out at 31 is. But it's a valid question. Is will the Blue Jays be able to surround Jose Bautista with enough developed talent while they still have him? And they still have him for 4 years after this one. So it's certainly a valid question. And do they have time to wait?
How do you get that next that number one pitcher, like through a trade? What would you have to give up?
Well, I don't want to get into that because if you'd asked me,
I know you don't like that hypothetical.
Because
it's
ridiculous. Because if you'd asked me what it would have taken to get Colby Rasmus, if someone had called in here and said Zach Stewart, Mark Zepchinski, and Jason Fraser, I would have laughed you off the air. And that's exactly what they had to give up to get him. So you never know. It's established, well established, that Alex Anthopoulos is a ninja. And a silent assassin, and he can go and do anything. So I wouldn't put anything past him. But how do you go get a number one pitcher? You either trade for one, or you go get one, or your guys develop into them. And what you do is you have as many guys with as much stuff as you can possibly have. And if Dustin McGowan's healthy, there's another guy at the top of your rotation. If Brandon Morrow clicks like he did the last two-thirds of last season, there's another one. Henderson Alvarez keeps this up, there's another one. And your starting rotation is all of a sudden four deep, and only Tampa Bay and Philly have a better rotation in the major leagues. If a trade presents itself where a high-quality, proven arm is available, then the Blue Jays will go pretty hard after that. If not, it might have to be Darvish and Morrow and McGowan and Alvarez and Cecil and a bunch of guys, and you know, hoping on a Hutchison or a Molina to break through. And, again, you hope for your development from other guys as well, the offense, so that your starting pitching doesn't have to be that great. Because you look at the Yankees and the Red Sox, there's no starting pitching there. There's very little starting pitching there. And they've managed to do awfully well for themselves. It's a fallacy that you have to have five great starting pitchers. There's not a single team in the major leagues that has five great starting pitchers. And there's only one that has four. More of your calls on the other side of the Extendo Jays Talk.
Back 2-0 in the pitch, belted to left center field, long high drive. Thames goes back to the wall. That ball's gone into the front row of the 100 level. Borges has just hit his 12th home run to go along with a triple, and he's halfway toward the coveted cycle. The Angels lead it 2-0. He has scored both runs.
And Borges wound up three-quarters of the way to the cycle. He would add a single in the eighth inning, and he was left on deck when Chad Beck struck out Vernon Wells to end the top of the ninth inning. Borges just a double shy of the cycle. Scored three runs. Part of the Angels 7-2 win over your Toronto Blue Jays. But terrific outing for Dustin McGowan. He gives up two runs on five hits over five innings. Doesn't walk a man and strikes out eight. The first time he's had that many strikeouts since my 10-year-old's sixth birthday. An amazing story. And how about Chad Beck? Here's a guy who his entire major league career had consisted of one pitch going into tonight, and when he got Dustin Pedroia to fly out in Boston last week, he comes in, he strikes out Torii Hunter on three pitches, he gets Mark Trumbo to ground out, gives up a single to Alberto Callaspo, and then strikes out Vernon Wells. Chad Beck's got a big arm, 96-mile-an-hour fastball tonight. Chad Beck may be, and it's very early to suggest this, maybe guy can close for this team. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance 1-888-666-0590. The big news before the game, of course, Brett Laurie is done. He took a bad hop ground ball off the middle finger of his right hand, and the right hand broke. Brett Laurie tweeting earlier this hour, "Sorry, everyone. I know it seems bad, but these are just minor bumps in the road." Amazing that he feels as though he has to apologize for breaking a finger. But an incredible rookie season for Brett Laurie, even though he was only up for 43 games. He will miss the final week of the season, and John Farrell explaining that it's probably going to be a 4 to 6 week healing thing. Not that, that matters. He'll be fine going into spring training. No longer eligible for Rookie of the Year in 2012. Not as of last week. I'm Mike Wilner. We're taking your phone calls. We're taking your tweets at Wilnerness590. Now let's go to the phones. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell. Long distance, 1-888-660-590. Chris is in Toronto. Hello, Chris.
Hi there. How you doing?
I am well, thank you.
Sorry for asking.
If you care, I don't mind you asking.
Oh, okay. I do care a little bit.
Well, a little bit. Thank you.
Okay. I just had a couple comments and questions, actually, about this Jose Bautista-Curtis Granderson debate going on right now.
I don't think the debate's really between Bautista and Granderson, but that's what that caller wanted to make it into.
Well, it seems like it's a pretty tight race for the MVP between those two guys, maybe one other two in the or two in the league. But
I think Jacoby Ellsbury, Adrian Gonzalez, Robinson Cano, Justin Verlander are all very, very much in that race.
Verlander, yeah, he's very close. But my thought was that if you have Granderson and you just removed him from the Yankees, you still have a pretty decent Yankee team.
Yes, you do.
And if you removed Jose Bautista from the Jays, where do you think the Jays would be right now without him playing in the lineup? And
in fourth place.
Yeah.
Which is where they are right now.
They would still be there, you think?
I don't think that stuff matters, to be honest with you. Because that makes the MVP about who your teammates are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you shouldn't win the MVP for having better teammates.
Well, that's a very good point. I never actually thought about that way.
Thank you.
Like, I was just thinking that if he would be, considering he's more valuable to the Jays than Curtis Granderson is to the Yankees, if you look at it that way.
I believe that's true. That's true. But the truth of the matter is, voters will say the Jays didn't make the playoffs with Jose Bautista. They wouldn't have made the playoffs without him. Mm-hmm. You know, they finished fourth with him. They would have finished fourth without him. And so that's the kind of attack that people can take. I prefer to look at it as a best player, as a most outstanding. And I know that a lot of people have an issue with the use of the word valuable, and that can kind of mess things up. But for me anyway, the best way to look at it is just as the best player. Because, yeah, it's MVP is not best player on a playoff team, right? And you want to make it about the guy and not about his teammates. At least I hope you want to make it about the guy and not his teammates.
Well, that's the whole point of the most valuable player, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. I just want to leave you with one more question.
Sure.
Where do you think Snyder is going to be fitting in next year with Thames playing so well in his defense, improving in the outfield every time he's out there? It looks like he's getting better and better. So I'll leave you with that, then I'll hang up and let you run with that and just wanted to see what your thoughts are.
Okay. Well, the truth is I don't know. I don't think that Eric Thames and Travis Snyder will both be on the team together. I think they're both starters, and I think that until they prove otherwise, there's no, you know, you don't want to make one of those guys a bench player. So one of them is likely to be the everyday left fielder here, and the other one is likely to be an everyday player in Las Vegas. I just don't know who. And to be honest, you know, again, we've mentioned the ninja properties of Alex Anthopoulos. Things can change, and things can change pretty quickly. So you never know what that left field situation may wind up being like when we hit spring training. But yes, Eric Thames' defense is improving, no question. He is still not close to the defender that Travis Snyder is. The bat is strong. I would love to see more plate discipline, but I didn't see much plate discipline out of Snyder this year either. I don't know. I still think Travis Snyder is the better overall prospect. But Eric Thames has certainly proven more at the major league level. Don is in Las Vegas. Hello, Don.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Good. How is the desert?
Oh, and it's nice out. The heat's finally broken. This is our summer now.
So it's like 95 now?
95, yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
So about the game tonight, because I know you love to always talk about tonight's game.
I like
Couldn't
to talk about
Couldn't be more thrilled with Dusty. He was absolutely dominant from the windup, I thought. And it just seems like he still has a little bit of work to do from the stretch, and I think that's why some of those innings snowball on him when he gets runners on. But from the windup, he looks dominant.
Well, he gave up his two biggest hits tonight from the. In fact, he gave up all but one of his hits from the windup tonight.
But the late movement on it.
It's unbelievable. His stuff has always been through the roof. Yeah. And the fact that he's been able to sustain that stuff after 3.5 years is near ridiculous.
So maybe everyone will stop talking about us needing to go out and get another 2 or 3 because it looks like we might have another 1 or 2 on our hands.
Don't count your chickens just yet.
No, I said might.
Right.
Anyway, the main reason I called is that now that Mr. Lowry's season has officially come to an end, I wanted to get a very early bid in for his official nickname. I got 4 possibilities here, and I wanted you to evaluate them.
All right, but I will say that I think nicknames are an organic thing, and I think that...
Okay, all right. I just want to get it in. I want to get it out into the atmosphere, and who knows, maybe, you know...
Okay,
sure. First one would just be a little bit of a rock and roll reference, Super Brett.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Second one would be Mr. Everything.
Okay.
Third one, bit of a groaner, CIA.
CIA?
Well, he's from Langley.
Okay.
And the fourth one, the one I'm going to hang my hat on that I think actually has a shot, the Canadian Clipper.
All right. They're out there now. They're in the atmosphere. I've referred to him in the past as the Great Bretzky, and I've referred to him as Kid Canada in the past. So we'll see if any of those catch on. But so far, it's just been a pleasure to watch the man play. CIA. That is a bit of a stretch. Guy is in Toronto, unless it's Guy.
It's Guy, Guy.
All right, Guy.
Mike, I got to tell you, there's a bit of a contradiction when it comes to any Blue Jay winning awards. I mean, it seems like everything's got to align according to, the stars here. I mean, you got a guy coming on saying, the last half of the season, Jose Bautista hasn't done anything. I totally agree with you. It should be the numbers are the numbers regardless of when he did it. It's for that season. I don't remember last season Josh Hamilton playing the last 7 weeks of the season, and who was the MVP last year?
It was only September. I think it was 3.5 weeks that he didn't play. But, yes, he didn't play at all in September, and he was the MVP.
Second to that, Curtis Granderson plays in a ballpark where, one-third of his home runs are fly balls in every single ballpark in the American League. That ballpark's ridiculous. And Jose Bautista, he had, Juan Rivera and Edward Encarnacion the first half of the season hitting behind him. So he's got absolutely no protection behind him the first half of the season. And, Curtis Granderson's, I'm sure, seen a lot better pitches than, Jose Bautista. And it just seems like, if Jose Bautista was a New York Yankee with the exact same numbers, he would be the MVP, hands down.
Yeah, there's no question about it. There wouldn't even be a debate if Jose Bautista was a New York Yankee.
Saying that, last year he couldn't be the MVP because he was batting .250, but Curtis Granderson's batting .260, and there's talk about him being the MVP. Personally, if I'm looking at who the real MVP is this year, I love Jose Bautista, but if I'm being honest with myself here, I'd give it to Jacoby Ellsbury, with the numbers that he's put up. I don't even put Granderson in the top four.
Yeah, I wonder about who the top 3 and 4 would be when it all shakes down, because there are a lot of good candidates in the American League. And, Ellsbury's an interesting case because he's doing things that you wouldn't expect a guy with his skill set to be doing. He's in the top 5 in batting average, which you'd expect. He's in the top 4 in stolen bases, which you'd expect. You would not expect him to be leading the league in total bases. I look at that, and I find that to be astonishing.
And he hasn't made an error.
Well, that doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, it's part of the whole package.
No, it isn't. It's not easy to make an error in the outfield.
Well, regardless, he's been perfect. I mean, that's still something to say. And I just find, with this, you hit it right on. This is a most valuable player. Baseball is the only sport where there seems to be controversy around what MVP is. There's no controversy in the NFL, the NHL, and basketball. The MVP is the best player, and the best player puts the best numbers up, regardless of whether they did it in April, June, or September. And I hope Jose. I'd love to see Jose win it. I thought he should have won it last year. I think Ellsbury deserves to win it this year. I don't believe a pitcher should win it. They got their own award, and Verlander's been unbelievable, but. Saying that, he had a great year, and we'll see what happens next year. But just one last thing I want to ask you. Brett Laurie, has he had too many at bats?
Yes, he has.
So he can't be rookie of the year next year.
No.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. I appreciate the call. I don't know why people are so hung up on the Brett Laurie rookie of the year thing. I don't like that Jacoby Ellsbury isn't in the top 10 in the league in on base percentage, but the numbers in the overall, I'm right now, look at me, I'm floored that he's leading the American League in total bases. And, he isn't anymore. He's now one behind Adrian Gonzalez, who passed him tonight. But a .319 batting average, he's .374 on base, which is very strong. Slugging percentage of .540. Make a case. His team's in the middle of an epic collapse. But you can make a case. Jorge Posada, a pinch-hit two-run single in the bottom of the eighth inning, has given the New York Yankees a 4-2 lead on the Tampa Bay Rays. The Yankees now three outs away from clinching the American League East Division. And if the Rays lose, then they and the Angels would be tied for second place in the AL wildcard race, just 2.5 games behind Boston. Steve is in Brantford. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Sorry, I can't actually remember my original questions. I was listening to a lot of the debates about the MVP and whatnot.
Hey, that's okay. You want to react to what's been said since? That's awesome.
Well, yeah, I was actually, while I'm thinking about it, I was watching some of the Yankee game today, and they made no mention. They had the top six guys for the Rookie of the Year, and they made no mention of JP. And I was sort of shocked because Cone and everybody, they were talking about all these guys, Trumbo and everything.
Right, so they put in Trumbo and not Aaron Sebia,
really,
huh?
A lack of respect for JP Aaron Sebia, especially the position he plays. And I wondered if you feel he should be like top three or somewhere in there.
I think he should get some votes for Rookie of the Year. I think if you're discussing Mark Trumbo for Rookie of the Year, then you have to discuss JP Aaron Sebia for Rookie of the Year. They've put up basically the same numbers, and JP's catching.
Yeah, exactly. Arguably the most important position.
Well, if you don't have a catcher, everything's just a pass ball.
Absolutely. But the other thing is, Roy Halladay, he lost a couple days ago, so it looks like he won't get his 20. But what do you think his chances are now that there's a couple of 20-game winners in the NL for the Cy Young this year?
His chances are not great, I don't think.
Well, with Cliff Lee, too, right? They have
I don't know about that. Yeah. I think he's got to worry more about Clayton Kershaw and Ian Kennedy more than anything else.
I just didn't know if they'd split up the vote somewhat.
Kershaw's winning the Triple Crown right now of pitching in the National League, so you kind of have to give him the Cy Young Award unanimously.
Yeah.
When you lead the league in wins, ERA, and strikeouts.
That's true. Clemens-type stat, right?
Yeah, and he's only a couple innings behind Roy Halladay for innings pitched overall. Yeah, he's having a sensational season.
So he'd be your choice for sure, then. Eh?
He's my choice.
And the other thing is, what do you feel about Verlander as an MVP? I never used to believe pitchers should win, but geez, the 24 wins. All the players seem so bunched up. I'm really looking at him as, you know, where would they be without him?
They would probably be about 3 games up instead of 12.5 games up.
Yeah,
I think
they should win, or do you just think?
No, I don't think he should win. I don't feel like pitchers have their own award, so they shouldn't be eligible for the MVP. I don't believe in that. But I believe that for a pitcher to win the MVP, he has to have an outstanding year in the absence of a hitter having an outstanding year. Justin Verlander has no effect on more than 75% of the games that the Detroit Tigers play. 80%, in fact. He has no effect, none whatsoever, on 80% of their games. And I have a very hard time saying he should be the MVP. Now, look, Pedro Martinez in 1999, he didn't win the MVP, and he had a way better year than Verlander's having this year. So that might do it. The music means we have to go. Jeff Samut is going to be on next. The Blue Jays have one home game left. Come out tomorrow night to say goodbye to this ball club. We'll be back on at 7 o'clock. Thanks to Tom Young, Joe Sicilia, Joel McFadden. Go vote for Tom.